line. Willie, D-Bays, 1025-1063, the game and the Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Joining us now is Mitch Light, college football writer for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you for joining us. Off the bat, what was your number one takeaway from week one in college football?
Well, first of all, well, thanks for having me on. As I told you guys last week, I was going to be at a wedding, busy all Sunday night, so I missed the LSU game.
I did too, actually. What happened?
I haven't seen scores. I just assumed they won, so we, you know.
Me too. Congrats, Tigers.
Yeah. that would be 1B, I think, the Florida State win. You got to go to the biggest story in the nation. It's Colorado. I mean, no doubt about it. And it's not just like I'm sort of stunned they won. And because I pay close attention to this stuff, I follow recruiting very closely. And they made waves because they flipped the roster. But outside of Shedeur Sanders, who was a highly recruited quarterback, and the running back Dylan Edwards, who was committed to Notre Dame before he flipped, a lot of the guys weren't that highly recruited out of high school or weren't that great of gets in the transfer portal. So I was just right off the bat, there was no jitters. They looked so well prepared and well coached. Now he did a great job hiring his staff. Sean Lewis is going to be a Power 5 head coach soon. Did a great job as the offensive coordinator at Syracuse, then went to Kent State as the head coach. So I thought it was just an amazing game, fun to watch. You know, we don't know how good TCU is. They lost a lot from last year, but I think Colorado has to be the story of the weekend.
Yeah, they are, Mitch, and what they were able to do. And I don't – because I think Coach Sanders has gotten his team to a point where they believe, even before the TCU game, they believe they can beat just about anybody in the country. And you saw – now, was TCU the ideal opponent for Colorado? Probably not. I think Colorado was – better, like you said, they were better equipped and prepared to play a TCU team that doesn't play any defense. We know they don't play much defense in the Big 12, but TCU didn't play any. And Colorado, for that fact, they didn't play any defense as well. But it seemed like they had the better players that were prepared.
Yeah, they had some difference makers. And, you know, that's game sometimes simple. Is, you know, when you've got the best players on the field, that's a huge advantage, and Sanders was great at quarterback position. And Dylan Edwards, again, like that touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown, showed a great burst down the sideline. He was a great player. And, you know, the thing that we're going to have to watch from Colorado is their depth as the season wears on. How can they handle injuries? They're not great on either line of scrimmage. But I think you hit on something, Derek. You know, obviously you played the sport at a very high level, and this is – you only get to play 12 times in the regular season. You got to be prepared. And that's one of the biggest tasks I think coaching staffs have, is getting their teams ready to play at in whatever motivation is out there, real, perceived. You know, you heard, no one believed in us, and, you know, all this. This is the case. No one did believe in them, but most of the time that's not the case. But that doesn't matter. It matters what those guys in that locker room believe, and he did a masterful job getting that team ready to play.
Now, the Vols. They had a win this weekend, but that first half, watching that game, they did not look anything like the Vol offense that we saw last year. Joe Milton, I don't know if he's ever going to be the accurate quarterback that Hendon Hooker was, but he did not look good in that first half. I know his receiver had a big drop down the field that would have been a touchdown, but he had passes that were overthrown. Even some of the passes that were caught, they were high and outside. It just seems like when he had to throw those short passes, he was off and off a lot.
You know, first of all, I hope Joe Rexford was not listening to this.
You mean GB Joe?
Yeah, he just drove off the road, so Joe, be safe. It's a long season. I got to confess, not only was I out of pocket for all the weekend, the hotel I was in, I guess, I don't even know what cable, you guys probably saw, there was a big dispute with ESPN and one of the cable companies. So, like, I didn't even have ESPN, so fortunately there's a lot more games on Fox and NBC than ever before. But, you know, I followed the game, and that's going to be it. You know, it was only one game, but this is not a young quarterback. He's in his fifth year, right? Not sixth, I think fifth year, and can he handle the precision of the up-tempo offense and make those accurate throws? Because when you're doing those quick timing, as you know as a wide receiver, those quick timing patterns, if you're off by 2 feet, it can be a six-yard gain instead of a 70-yard gain. And, you know, you got to hit the guys in motion and stuff. So that's going to be an ongoing story for them. Now, fortunately, they played a bad team. I think Virginia might end up being the worst Power 5 team in the country. You know, and they got banged up at the quarterback position there, too. So, hey, you know, they got the win. Obviously a big win. They'll win again this week. Future tests are coming, and he's got to be better at the quarterback position.
Mitch, last night, a lot of us watching the featured game, and I think everybody had to be stunned at what they saw. Were you more stunned at how good Duke looked and how handily they ended up winning the game on the scoreboard, or were you more stunned at Clemson just looked very pedestrian?
Yeah, I mean, that's always tough. It's always something in the middle. If I had to choose, I would probably say more stunned Clemson didn't look like they did, because this is a Duke team that went 9-4 last year and had close losses. And they got a great quarterback. You know, it's sometimes, you know, I was talking to someone about this today, and I don't know, Derek, I'd be interested to see you if you watched the game last night. I kind of compare Duke's quarterback in skill set a little bit to Jay Cutler. Cutler might have a better arm, but the point being, sometimes you get lucky in recruiting. Jay Cutler fell into Vanderbilt's lap. Riley Leonard, you know, Duke, I think, used his only offer and didn't even take the visit. They turned out to be a great quarterback. But going to Clemson, I thought they looked – you know, obviously the running backs are good, Maffa and Will Shipley. Other than that, they were ordinary on offense, like skill position players. Like, I think Vanderbilt has better wide receivers than Clemson, and, you know, that shouldn't happen if you're Clemson. Club Nick's first regular season start, like, where were the open receivers? You watched TCU last year, they have athletes, and I say that because obviously the offensive coordinator, they have athletes all over the place, wide open. The throws were difficult because guys weren't open last night. And you can look at this and say, let's turn it around, Willie, and say, okay, they fumbled twice inside the seven. They missed field goals. Okay, let's say they don't do that, and they win that game 27-20 or whatever. You'd still be alarmed by Clemson because they, you know, just convert those points fine. Don't change anything else from the game. They just did not look like a team that has the weapons on offense to compete for a playoff spot.
Not a dominant team. I think the stat was what they did not punt in the second half, but they also did not score.
That's very difficult to do.
That is pretty impressive.
I think a lot of people would be curious here, Mitch, because for a while, you know, if you were Vanderbilt and you're like, okay, let's build. They hired Derek Mason because they wanted to model Stanford, right? That had to be a big part of it. He was the defensive coordinator for some great Stanford teams. Profile of the school similar. Let's go that route. Made a lot of sense at the time. Stanford has sort of fallen on some hard times. We know what's going on at Northwestern, which would get another model, right? Hey, Northwestern's been pretty good. How has Duke climbed back to this level fairly quick in the second year of this guy?
Yeah, Mike Elko's done a phenomenal job, and there's a little Vanderbilt connection there. You know, Mike Elko is Clark Lee's mentor. So he was, I believe they were both at Bowling Green together with David Clawson. I'm not 100% sure about Elko there, but
We'll Clawson, ask Coach Lee here in a few minutes.
Yeah, well, yeah. Clawson was Elko was the defensive coordinator at Duke, and Clark Lee was the linebackers coach. Elko gets hired by Notre Dame. Clark Lee follows him to Notre Dame. Elko gets hired by Texas A&M, and Clark Lee gets bumped up to defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, and then we know what happened there. So, you know, he was not a hot coaching commodity by any stretch. He was a very well-regarded defensive coordinator. And, you know, they haven't recruited great. You know, their recruiting rankings are probably very similar. Well, they are very similar to Vanderbilt's. They hit a home run with the quarterback, and they look very fast on defense, and they're very well coached. So there's no secret sauce. It's not like they're running a gimmicky offense or whatever. It's just they got good quickly. I wish I had a better answer for you. I'm guessing that maybe it was a little bit of like the James Franklin – Bobby Johnson, where Bobby Johnson, as he got better, never really broke through other than the bowl game, but the recruiting results were better later in his tenure. And then James Franklin comes in, a new voice, but there's better talent than people think. I'm guessing that David Cutcliffe had some really good evaluations later. Despite the poor record his last few years, he had a lot of success at Duke. The recruiting elevated. new voice comes in and Mike Elko, because it clearly, you know, ran its course under David Cutcliffe, and they're just they're winning games. So I think you can probably draw parallels between those two situations.
Mitch, I spent some time in Ohio over the weekend, and there were some very disgruntled Buckeye fans over a very bland performance against Indiana. And, of course, it was on national TV. The game took a
very long time.
Gary
Danielson do a Big Ten game. I know he used to do them, but that was a very weird broadcast. It's going to take a while to get used to that.
But what did you make of Ohio State's performance there? Because it wasn't what anybody wanted.
I watched a decent amount of that game, and you know, the goal is to win, and did you ever really think Indiana was going to win? No, but they didn't exactly, with those weapons at wide receiver, they didn't look like they were in position to really take advantage of them. So I'm not going to, you know, I think C.J. Stroud's first game as a starter was out of Minnesota on a Thursday night, and there were some good and there's some bad, but you didn't leave that game saying, wow, C.J. Stroud's a future top five pick. So I'm not going to overreact there. Was a road win against an Indiana team that, you know, in the opener was all motivated and all that. But I think they'll be fine. They've got good running backs. The offensive line probably wasn't as good as I thought it would be. But they're clearly going to want to see more. It's interesting because they said they were going to play both quarterbacks. But when, you know, I think Devin Brown only played a couple series.
Sammy Ball, three plays, got stopped on fourth down and didn't see him again.
Nah, get him out of here.
Yeah, so that's going to be something to monitor, because that's definitely what Ryan Day does not want. I mean, he doesn't want to be rotating quarterbacks once they get into the meat of the schedule.
Now, Mitch, before we get you out of here, I got a question about this week's matchup between Alabama and Texas. Do you believe Alabama, because it seems like, you know, from what I've seen for both teams, Texas might be the better team this go around. Not to say that they're going to win, but because of the Milroe being at quarterback, Jalen, and it's nothing like it was last year from a passing standpoint, do you think Alabama leans back to what they used to be until they can find that quarterback that can get them back to that sort of pass-happy offense that they've been for, what, the last 8-9 years? Because right now it doesn't seem like this offense from a passing standpoint is flowing the way that Nick Saban would like it to.
Yeah, it's not just Milroe, too. I don't think they've got the proven wide receivers. Now they go hand-in-hand. If you get the quarterback, you can be a little more, you know, have a little more confidence in throwing the ball. But I suspect, you know, if you ask Nick Saban what the game plan is, you know, probably pretty conservative, hope to get the lead and lean on the running game. Because, you know, I was proven wrong about Jalen Hurts. But early in his career, even though he was winning games, I just would watch him and say, when it's 3rd and 12 – against a good team, can he make that throw? And then when you watch Alabama, I don't really think early in his career the coaches trusted him to make that throw, so they ran a run heavy offense. I think that's what we're going to see there. That's going to be the test. Can Jalen Milroe make that big throw on 3rd down when they need to move the chains late in the game? I'm intrigued to watch this Texas team. One thing about them, they're very good on both lines of scrimmage. That's kind of the quarterback recruiting we all know about, Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning, but they recruited very well on both lines of scrimmage, so they're going to be bigger there. It's just a huge test for that program. Sarkisian just needs a validating win like that. So I'm really excited to watch this game. I haven't really thought too much about a pick. I'd probably pick Alabama since they're at home, but there's just so many intriguing elements to this game.
Mitch Light is with us. Last one for you, Mitch. Are both Billy Napier and Dabo Sweeney at Florida and Clemson, respectively, next season?
Oh, that's a great one. I think Dabo, yes, no doubt about it, unless he just retires, because there's no way. I've been talking to Willie on the radio for years, and you could probably point him out. I'm always way too conservative. Like, they're going to have to year. And I was like, when am I going to learn this is the SEC and guys get fired all the time? So I'm going to say that I do think Billy Napier will be back, but that was not – and they just – as a fan, if you're a Florida fan, what do you want? You want to see your team maximize its talent, not make mistakes. Mm-hmm. They did not do that. I mean, they just looked I don't want to beat the drum too much in this, but the penalty with the two guys, number threes, I mean, I think Andy Staples pointed this out. A lot of people did. They've, like, had an enormous staff. They got, like, 50 guys, analysts, like, just figure out not to have the same number on the field, and they might not win the game, but that was a huge turning point in the game. And so just like that was the alarming thing. Yes, Florida's not great. They don't have skill players that scare you, but at least you can be well coached and prepared. And they didn't look like they were well coached. That's what alarms me. But I will be very conservative and say, yes, Billy Napier will be back next year.
Mitch Light, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
Awesome. Thanks, Mitch. You too. We'll react to what Mitch had to say there coming up next. Clark Lee will join us in 10 minutes. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.